You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Welcome to the Diablo's Den, Corona Chronicles, episode number 13. I'm your co-host, Jay Reason, and I'm here with the one and only Danny Diablo.
What's up, everybody?
What's up, E? How are you, man? It's been a minute. We had a little break here in between. How have you been? What's going on?
Well, first thing I want to say, what's up, Jay? Congratulations to you opening up your new store in fucking Connecticut.
You are
in the news. You're in the news twice.
Yeah.
You're the paper and the news.
Yeah.
And the media.
Thank you so much, man. Like, I know that you've known it's been coming for a long time. I've been working on this for a long time. So I'm super proud to announce that Static Era, which you guys all know is my label, we have a brand new brick and mortar retail store in beautiful downtown Milford, Connecticut. If you're watching us on YouTube, you're going to see the news story cut in over here.
Music fans in Milford have a new place to search for local gems. News 12 Connecticut's Sean McCabe has more from Static Era Records.
Punk rock is alive and well here in Connecticut, and now it's got a new home here in Milford.
Take a look at the store. I mean, I think that says everything, you know?
After years working with Sony, Jay Reason says he started his Static Era record label to give a voice to the Connecticut hardcore scene that shaped him.
Cruel Hand just finished up a new record with Zeus. That will be out in the next few months. We have a new record from Sights and Sounds that just came out, a new record from Husbandry.
He says the new Static Era store is a way to showcase local acts who would normally be promoting themselves with concerts and tours.
Shows are so important for those bands, and if they don't have a way to give their merch and sell their stuff, I mean, it's really tough. There's a lot of music out there these days.
He says platforms like YouTube and SoundCloud just don't build community like a local music scene can.
I don't think any of those things still replace like actually going out, meeting like the kids who are into your music, giving out free demos, telling them to come to a show.
Reason says Static Era will carry a little bit of everything for everyone.
We offer some toys, there's vinyl accessories. We have tons of new releases, so like everything from rock, hip hop, alternative.
But he also sees it as a gathering space for Connecticut's DIY artist community.
Just about having an outlet right now. I mean, I love going to shows just as much as anybody else. So without a show, I needed to have something.
Static Era is open Fridays and Saturdays from 12 to 7. For the rest of the week, you can make an appointment on their website. We have a link at news12.com. In Milford, Sean McCabe, News 12, Connecticut.
E, I cannot wait for you to come down and see the store. Check out the whole spot.
I want a DJ in there.
Well, listen, man, we're waiting for you to come down. You've got open, you have an open spot any day you want, man. But it's really cool to see the community's reaction, dude. I got to just shout out all my friends, man. It would take me way too long to list everybody. But, dude, man, I mean, E, from you to everybody who has been so supportive in helping the vision grow and sending stuff to the store and just, you know, man, like I feel the love, dude. I'm so grateful to this community, man, to be a part of the music scene and, you know, dude, just, you know, man, give something back, dude. So thank you so much for acknowledging that. I'm really happy for the store.
I'm happy that you have a place to call home now. You're an office, like that's not at work. You
know what
I mean? So you can go there and do everything you want there. That's fucking amazing.
Thanks,
that's
man. Yeah, next episode you see us, I will be recording it at the space. So it will be a little bit of a different background. But so shout out to that. You just finished watching the clip here on the news. Big shout out to News 12 Connecticut for coming down and checking it out. So I do want to shout out, man. We do have a little bit of a sad note, though. I'll let you take it from here, brother.
Well, I always take the glasses off. Shout out to my brother Steve Poss. Rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace, Steve.
Steve Poss, people don't know who Steve Poss was. It is a soul. Steve Poss was like one of the founding members of the New York hardcore scene, the first wave. Steve Poss and Jimmy Gestapo of Murphy's Law were always together, that crew. I'm very close to that crew because it's just like part of Queens guys. I mean, Steve Poss is a Forest Hills Jewish fucking hardcore guy. He knew This is how close. He knew my mom. He knew my brother. He knew my father. Yeah, basically, he was there when my father died. He was there when my brother killed himself. Always, I did a thing for the toys and canned foods to it was a Christmas thing, right? It was a Hanukkah Christmas thing, and me, Steve Potts, brought all the stuff together to this place for to give to things. And when we rolled up there, me and Steve Potts, I looked at Steve Potts, I had a Santa Claus hat thing on, like a little elf. And I looked at the way I looked, and we gave it to them. They were like, thank you. But they bugged out on us.
Yeah, that's wild.
For the kids. But Steve Potts had a great heart. And he was one of the funniest, real New Yorker. He would diss you in your face and laugh. He was like 100 pounds.
Yeah.
But yeah, crazy, like neurotic Jew. But see, he passed away. He had two types of cancer, brain
Horrible
cancer
man.
and a cancer in his lungs. And he kept smoking to the day. Fucking they threw him out of the hospital for smoking while he had cancer. It's sad. I love you, Steve Potts. He's in a better place. Fuck cancer.
Yeah, man. I mean, horrible loss for the NYHC community, especially to I'll overlay some photos that have been going around, man, just to see.
Yeah.
You know, one of the founding members that you've seen in all these photos and shit. And I know he was very close with Jimmy and all those guys, dude. So huge.
And Paul Bev, shit.
Yep. So, dude, huge shout out from our show. Rest in peace, Steve Potts.
Rest in peace.
Positive note, though, E. What are you rocking this week, man? What are we? Oh, yo, actually, wait. Let's go back for 1 second. How was your trip? You just went back and you did some new Scarhead material. Let's talk little bit about that.
I went back. I went to Milwaukee. Scarhead got signed to Force 5 Records.
Shout out.
Shout out to Force 5 Records, Donnie. Hold on. So
the two sponsors of Diablo's Den podcast, Static Era Records and Force 5 Records.
So I went out there with Zach. Shout out to Zach.
Yeah, love Zach. Really quick, just speaking of Zach, he just got a bunch of all his back catalog shit.
Ruins Records.
Yep, so check his shit out, but go ahead.
Check it, Ruins Records. It's all Terror Zone, yep. Angels of Man, Homicide.
Yep. Right? Shout out Zach. So, Zach's good people, yeah.
Train of thought. So shout out to my brother Zach. He came out, and of course, my brother Dimmy,
yep.
The original Drummer Scarhead. So us three went out there with no music, whatever. We had some shit, whatever. And of course, they started sound. We were right there.
So I was just going to say, I was like keeping the tradition of not having written anything, just to...
Yes.
Yeah.
So basically, we went out there.
Get the fuel, just needs the secret fuel to write the record.
Yeah, so we go out there in 3 days. So Zach went out there. We had a bass player out there, but the bass player couldn't get the... You know, because it was on the point. A lot of people are great musicians, but when it comes to hardcore punk, they can't really jump on it and get because it's not there. They don't
understand.
No,
it's tough.
So
it's tough.
It's like
one of those things that's tricky where it's like everybody's like, oh, how hard is that? But dude, it's hard to keep that certain.
Listen, it's like when people say, oh, punk rock's easy. I would like to see a lot of these rappers do punk rock. That's why Ice-T kills it. Because Ice-T could kill it, punk rock style, metal style. So, and can rap. So all these people talk all this shit, but they don't know. So basically, Zach played guitar and bass on the fucking record. Did play drums. We did 5 songs in 3 days. We did all the music. Now I gotta go back and do the vocals. So we did the thing, and it was cool. We're going back there. I go back on November 6th to do. I'm producing the Big Left record. I signed.
Yeah, we talked about that on the last episode.
Signed him. So I signed Big Left as A&R executive producer to Force 5. Also. On this record, I got Scott Vogel is going to be a guest, right?
Sick.
Joe Fado is going to be has some scratching
on it. Yep.
And he's right. And Joe Fado's going to sing some stuff also.
Shit.
So Joe Fado and Big Left's going to sing some stuff.
Yo, we should do Diablo's Den skits in between it or something on the on the mixtape, like the next shit.
Definitely.
Like you and me do some shit on there.
And also, I have to say this. It's also sad. Saint Dog from Cottonmouth Kings, the original guy from Cottonmouth Kings, who was on Force 5 Records, who was on Suburban Noise Records with me, he passed away 2 days ago.
Oh, come on.
I just want to say a shout out to his brother, Big Hoss, who me and him do music together. I did a few songs with him. Saint Dog and I, we knew each other by just like passing, but let's say what's up to each other. Dude was an Inland Empire Riverside king of the underground. Like he was straight underground white boy gangster rap. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Kid was dope. He had his own style. So to all the Kamau King dudes, all the Juggalos, all the fucking Suburban Noise soldiers, I'm sorry. And to his family, I'm sorry. And we're gonna miss you. He was a big personality, and it's sad to see someone go like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. No.
So, rest in peace, Saint Dog. Right. So.
So E, on that note, though, we do have a very good show for you today, right?
Yes, I do. But before that, I just want to say this: my sunglasses right here, Black Flies. So listen, shout out to Black Flies. Go to Black Flies. Google them. Go to blackflies.com.
I'll have a check link.
Out, I will have a link. Black Flies, please go check them out. Shout out to Mishka for hooking me up. My Mishka hat. Mishka's amazing. They hooked me up. Great, dope stuff. And shout out to my brother right here. See this? Freedom in a Cage.
Oh, yeah. Shout out.
That's White Derek. Baby Stress. Freedom in a Cage. Go to Freedom in a Cage on fucking Instagram. He has dope clothes. He has like that. Like, check that out. I'm just saying, I look fly because these people hook me up. Mishka, Freedom in a Cage, and Black Flies.
Shout out.
All day.
Shout out.
All right, so someone was going to say me?
All right. No, I was going to say, we got a good show coming up for you tonight, though. So why don't you tell us first a little bit about our guest while I get him situated on here. We have talked a little bit about, you've been on kind of a role lately with the success of your indie project. It was a film, short film with that we've talked about a bunch. It's called Priceless. We have talked about it. Interestingly, from when you first started on the show to where we are now, to literally winning an award. And we're going to talk a little bit about that stuff and some of the other progress.
Yeah.
But tell everybody, while I get Real Wolf in here, just real quick, tell the fans a little bit about him.
All right, so Tom Vujic is a Tom Real Wolf. He has a production company. He does music also. He's a metalhead. He loves hardcore. He's a hip hop guy from Canada. He basically asked me to. Like, we met a while. We'll talk about it. But Tom is a dope director. He asked me to be in a movie, and me and Peter Green. And we did this movie last year, right? And of course, the COVID fucked everything up. But he got submitted to all these film festivals, and it sucks because I would be going to these film festivals and winning these fucking awards. And we got nominated 7 times at 3 different festivals.
All right, so hang that thought. Let's bring in Real Wolf E real quick.
Yes, Tom, let's go.
Okay. So on our last episode, E, you were kicking off with some really great news about Priceless. You had just won an award. Remind everybody what the award was. You and Peter Green and Tom got an award. There was two that day. So what were those for?
Tell Tom.
So that first time we won for best crime short.
Sick.
And Peter and Danny won for best acting duo. Congrats.
That's crazy.
So, and now check this. Here's the crazy thing, okay? So now we just won a third award, okay?
And that's what we wanted. So hold on, Tom. Wait. That's what we wanted to kick off tonight's interview with. Go ahead. So we have news about Price. Let's go ahead, Tom. Tell everybody what happened today before just before recording.
So here's a real interesting kicker. So today we just won our third award, which is getting best crime short, but check this. Here's an even bigger twist.
What's
literally
up?
In the last hour. You understand? Are you ready for this?
What?
Bro, we just won a fourth award.
Come on.
What? Get out of here!
Look at his face.
We won a fourth award. We just won the last hour. Another award.
Dude, we literally just won in the last hour.
That's amazing, man.
Damn! What's it for? What was it?
The next one we won is for best international thriller. You know what I'm saying?
Yo!
What's funny about the whole thing is that you guys are American, but I'm Canadian. So ironically, it won International Thriller because technically Priceless is considered a Canadian.
Canadian production team.
Kind of a, it's a funny little turn of events because the movie was filmed in New York. It's a but it's a Canadian movie.
Dope.
That's dope. Congratulations to both of you guys.
Tom, thank you so much, bro.
Well, thank you, man. You absolutely killed that performance, man. Thank you. It was an honor, bro.
So, Tom, let me ask you a little bit about that as a director and stuff, man. I've always said to Isaac, he's such a great actor and character person, the way he can convey the emotions in his face and stuff. How did you think of Danny for that role?
Okay, this is kind of an interesting story, the way this turned out. So, first of all, I'm going to be honest with you. Originally this movie, Priceless, was going to be a totally different movie. It actually was not going to be Priceless. What happened was a different movie called Dead of Night. And essentially what happened was neither Peter nor Danny could get into Canada.
That's totally on brand for both of them, by the way.
Getting on craziest cameras, all this shit.
I love it.
And it's
that.
Like, yo, get in. You know what I mean? So the funny thing, my boy, he's like, yo, I think I can get them in. I need Peter to tell me, like, what these things are. Dude, I don't even think Peter could figure it out. So we were just... I'm like, you know what? I think we have to shoot this shit in New York. And
it's fucked up.
We literally had, I'm telling you, the making of this movie is like as entertaining as the movie.
Yeah, no shit. <that's>...
The crazy thing is, we had to literally write a whole new script because now I'm like, yo, we're going into a totally different city. I can't have the same gear, the same crew. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
We wrote a whole new movie, but this is where it worked out. In the first script, Danny, it was going to be a 13 minute film, and Danny was only going to be in two of those 13 minutes. By changing the script situation, it now became Danny's in 13 minutes the entire movie. He essentially became the main character due to the rewrite.
I'm the main character. How crazy is that?
But what was crazy was, I'm telling you, the best part about this was, like, Danny, who Danny is, I'm telling you, like, anybody that knows Danny, he is a character.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? This tip, like, I remember Danny was so nervous about the roles. You know, I haven't acted that much, but I'm like, you know what, bro? The way this direction's going is like, this character is almost like you, even though he's Viper, is still like Danny. And you see him, you see his demeanor. And yo, I'm telling you, I said this shit to everybody, which is this: if I got a really, really good actor to play this character,
it wouldn't
still
be real.
Wouldn't be real. It was like Danny made it authentic. You feel
that's
me?
Dope. Yeah, dude. Listen, man, congrats to both of you, too. And, like, you know, I always can't champion Danny enough. And he knows that, man, outside of just even my
thank
friend.
Thank you, I'm both of you guys.
Yeah, I'm proud
of
him.
I feel good.
Yeah, no, I feel proud of him and everything he's doing. And Tom, I really back what you're doing with the film and involving him and Peter. And I wish you the best so much, man. So let me ask you, dude, when are we going to be able to see it? That's probably when everybody wants to know. I know it's doing the show circuit, and I'm not sure if people understand that kind of does – it takes a little while, but maybe you could walk us through and let people understand that when we might be able to get even just a little bit of a glimpse of what you and Danny have going on.
So this is kind of what I'm going to do. So basically how it works is, when it comes to film festivals, the second your movie's online, it's over. It's like, that's it. The film festival shit's done. You feel me?
All right.
So that's why, because festivals will not accept a movie that's publicly available.
Right.
Cool. Yeah, it's cool. Cool.
What you do is, when you finish a movie, they say you do either a year or a year and a half of festival runs. Now, here's the thing. We're in 2020, and COVID basically wiped out like half of the festivals this year.
Yeah.
So essentially what I'm going to do is, I want to just ride it out for about half the year.
Yep.
It's already October. I kind of just want to ride it out till the end of the year. So to answer everyone's question, it will be online some point in the beginning of 2021. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But will be releasing an exclusive scene from the movie. It's a 2.5 minute scene.
I was going to say, can we get, what do I got to do? Okay, hold on. Let me see if I could get this. Okay, Ezek knows exactly. What do I got to do to get a clip on this episode for the fans? Even if it's just a small...
Buddy, you know what? All you had to do was just ask.
There you go.
Right now.
And listen, and that's and this is how Diablo's Den works. The shit is hold on, sorry. The shit is on a circuit, but Tom and E are gonna for the fans here. So you heard it here.
Yes,
gonna,
thank you.
So I'm gonna suggest if you're listening to this, sorry guys, if you're listening to this, jump over to the YouTube. Don't and now while you're there, remember turn on notifications, subscribe. But you will watch Tom, you heard it. He's going to give me a little clip to cut in over here.
Viper.
What up?
Welcome.
Oh, shit, this guy's a fucking weirdo.
Curious, why would they give you a nickname Viper?
I'm not. Let's cut the small talk. I'm here to get the cocaine, get the fuck out of here. So I'm gonna put his money in his bag right here, and now. Let me see the father.
Sure. Would you mind?
Oh, my manners. Sorry about that, bro.
I can see the man I'm looking at. I think you're going to find this to be extraordinary.
Oh, shit. All right. What the fuck's this?
It's a family heirloom. Like, beautiful, isn't it?
See the resemblance. Kind of looks like you.
Sense of humor, Viper.
I'm just going to do this the old school way, right? Fuck.
Let me see that smile.
Oh, shit. Shit's fire. All right. So check out. I got the money right here.
All there?
All here. You want to count it? It's all here?
No, I trust you. So you love this, huh?
Yes, so listen, I'm just here to get this, that, and I'm out, right?
Well, I got a proposal for you.
Back the fuck off.
Okay.
I don't know. Listen.
What if I told you that you could keep your money, take this wonderful product and leave, and I just want one thing from you.
Wait. Shut up. Listen.
Your soul. I like your soul. You won't miss it.
Wait a second. So, you're like a soul snatcher, like the little red guy with the pitchfork? Like, that's what you're trying to tell me right now?
Something like that.
I gotta tell you also another thing. You guys both have something you don't know about, but a lot coming. You and Jay, yep. Both of you guys. Tom is Tom has his own label. Does music. He does. Tom, I know Tom. From, first time I met Tom was in 2007. Or Rock the Bells. He came to my house.
Yes,
in California.
It was actually even before that, actually knew him actually in Toronto. He played a show with Scott. Because remember, you were with Klee at the time. You were chilling with Klee.
Yes.
Yeah. Yo, I seen this guy, like literally, it was a fucking Scarhead show. And some guy shit to him. And all I've seen is bop.
Oh, dude, man.
I knocked the guy out. Yeah, beat the same guy.
And then still keeps performing. I'm like, yo.
I did that. Dude, that, listen. We could have a whole episode of stories.
I remember that the last show. I knocked him out, and I kept the show. I was introducing the band at the end, and I finished. He was knocked out, and I finished it. He was still on the floor.
Yo, that shit was classic.
Amazing.
I was like, yeah, this guy's the real deal. You know what I mean? So that's. I guess we've known each other for a minute. But anyway, ahead. What were you saying?
Oh no! I was just saying that. I was saying. Oh no! Go ahead.
I was saying that both of you guys have your own labels. Jay works behind the scenes, all record stuff. Like I'm talking about Jay's amazing. He gets vinyl.
Thank you.
He works with Brian McKnight. He works with fucking the new edition guys. Yo.
Yeah. I'm in a weird little. I'm in the music scene. I'm a ninja. Ask Isaac. It's like I work on a bunch of stuff, but I can't talk about any of the shit I work on. But I just opened a record store. I don't know. Listen, you get it. You get it, Tom, because you're in the same thing. It's like your shit comes out so much later that you can't really be like.
But I want you guys to talk so you can get your music. You get your music, uh-huh. Tom, into his record store.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. Let's do it. Man. And trust me, bro. When this COVID thing's over, I definitely will be back in New York. We all got to link up. I mean, Jay, are you in New York?
Yeah, I'm right in Connecticut. So actually, really, really quick, I want to ask you, Tom, about releasing a film. Obviously, I mean, you and Isaac had a whole plan for this. You know, you guys were going to travel, do it, and then COVID happens. Tell me very quickly about adapting, you know, your schedule and this whole thing, dude. Like, tell us quick about adapting that into what's going on today.
Well, I'll tell you another quick little thing right now. So in the case of Priceless, which is a short film, you don't expect to get any kind of crazy distribution because it's a short 13-minute film. So essentially what you want to do is ride the festival circuit, eventually release it online. But here's something that you might not know that Danny knows is I'm actually working on my debut feature film, sick, which is a documentary about Kool G Rap.
Awesome.
Okay. Yeah.
Movie. We have Alicia Keys in the movie. We have Onyx in the movie. We have Big Daddy Kane.
That's
this
awesome,
is a
man. Good...
Joe Fatal.
Joe Fatal.
Man, he's a fucking wizard behind the scenes, man. But we were scheduled to go and shoot plenty more interviews. I'm not going to say names, but some major names in the entertainment biz in both LA and New York. So COVID kind of fucked that up for me because luckily Priceless was done. You know what I'm saying? But this other movie, which is currently still in production, it's completely put it on hold, essentially. You know what I mean? Because traveling is difficult.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like on one hand, it's dope that we're winning these awards, which is great. But on the other hand, it's unfortunate that the current movie I'm working on is sort of on hold.
Isaac will tell you that's part of the New York hardcore curse because, right? He's involved in the Olympia Awards.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, yo, Tom, where can everybody find you online? Give us the Instagram. Plug Priceless, man. Give everybody, the socials and stuff, man.
So basically, my Instagram is Real Wolf, R-E-E-L, like a film reel. It's in the background there, Real Wolf _official. That's the Instagram. And I want everyone to check out our YouTube page because we're a very video-based company, so our YouTube is very important.
Yes.
Is youtube.com/realwolffilms.
And you'll see links for all of this stuff over this.
Yo, Tom works with the best of the underground rap.
That's the thing. We kill it with the underground rap. We put out crazy compilation albums that we just dropped a new album called Rabid.
I'm on it. I'm on it.
Metal, hardcore, hip-hop track that also features Ill Bill and Gore-Tex.
That's
and for
awesome.
Those that don't know, singer of a metal band, so my metal band's on that joint, and we're gonna be actually dropping that single soon. So by the time this podcast is out, it might even be out.
That's
but
awesome.
Check out Rapid Violence and check out Priceless, that will be out soon, and then stay tuned for the Kool G Rap feature length documentary.
Awesome. Well, yo, Tom, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Definitely, when you come into the city, man, we will have to bring you on again. And again, dude, thank you so much for sharing the exclusive clip here. We're really excited for that shit.
Thank you. And the last thing I just want to say, I heard y'all are having mugs.
Yeah.
And I just want appreciate the shout out to Mugs, because one of the first videos I ever did that broke me in the game was called Ill Bill. It was Ill Bill and DJ Mugs.
He's calling right now.
Is he calling you? Okay.
Yeah.
And I never talked to Mugs about it, but from what I heard, he loved the video. I know Bill loved it, so shout out.
The shit don't ever stop though. The niggas around my way, they call me fucking Chapo. I'm more like a Gestapo. Watch out for behindo. Got my homies down south, trapping in the bando. We got the best drogas out the mercado.
You know we just took that, just after we enlightened the hookah. These crook niggas are taking jewelry and just shoot ya, nigga. We got nothing to lose, just me and you. Can't walk in my shoes, man, fuck you too. We got nothing.
We had in a little intermission here from our last guest. You just saw a new video and song from Danny's new project, Spick. Danny, tell us a little bit about that clip real quick before we jump in with our guest.
It's like a commercial for the coming album called Spectacular. So
there you go.
That'll be out soon. That'll be out too on Devil Rats Records.
All right.
That shit sounds mad racist, yo.
and there he is, from France. We've been trying for a minute. We had some technical difficulties last week. In between, Danny went out and got himself some new hair color, which looks dope.
Dyed my beard too. Look at it.
Got himself some good old food poisoning, good old American food poisoning.
And in between, got himself some food poisoning, and now we're finally here with our guest.
That was horrible.
Everybody, please welcome DJ Mark.
I heard you was pissing out your ass for 4 days.
It was horrible. It was the worst sickness I ever had since since I guess when I got stabbed. I went home. They sent me home too early.
Yeah.
And I got an infection. Like my whole body for like 48 hours. It was like that kind of pain.
Wow.
It was horrible.
That's fun. Well, Danny, I'm glad that you have recovered and we have the show back, because we've been really excited to have Mugs on. We had some technical difficulties. We had to take a little bit of a break. Like I said, there was some chaos, but now we're back in and we're good to go. So Mugs, how have you been doing, man? What's been happening during this whole pandemic shit? What's going on with you?
Oh man, this pandemic has been the best time of my life, man. I swear to God, I got more shit done in the last 9 months than in the last 5 years. And I get a lot of shit done with you. All my creative homeboys said this is the best thing that's happened to them.
Yeah, music wise,
no bullshit.
Everything.
You got focus. There's no bullshit. There's no birthday parties, no meet me at the club, no come out for dinner. It's just like, get up and go do your shit, man. Motherfuckers is cleaning their closets out and getting shit done. And I'm talking across the board from everybody I know. It's like, you know, I finally went to Miami the other day and I loved the airport. Was nice. Nobody was fucking standing next to me. You know, nobody's breathing on me. All these ugly motherfuckers got their face covered. I love that shit.
Yo, how was Miami? How was it?
Miami was great. I went down there with my boy B and Danny, and we shot 3 videos in 4 days. The one with Crime Apple and Flea Lord, a couple with Flea Lord.
Shout out to Crime Apple.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, man, that shit was good down there. The weather was nice. We had a yacht out there in the fucking from Fort Lauderdale to Miami, just hanging out, drinking champagne every day, talking shit, making music, hanging out with the homies. You know, the regular shit.
That's life, bro. Yeah, that's the life I want, man.
I just got back. I just left Alchemist's crib right now. I just left over there. I just got back here. I'm mixing a single.
That's dope.
So Soul Assassin Winter Drop up with Capadonna. So I'm mixing it right now.
Oh yeah, that's gonna be awesome.
That's amazing. That's amazing, bro. Listen, Muggs, I'm gonna tell you something.
About to watch the Dodgers win. Win the World Series tonight. You know.
Yo, my brother, I want to ask you a question. what was it, the year, how old were you when you really got into music?
I want to say I was young just listening to music as a fan, you know?
Yeah.
But I think as a fan, I was just into it from my family, you know, all the 8-track tapes around, my grandparents listening to opera, my mom listening to Motown, my uncles listening to rock and roll and Zeppelin and Pink Floyd, and my older aunt, she was like 4 years older, into Kiss, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
I found hip hop, and I must have been through like Rapper's Delight in like 1979.
Yeah.
I was like 10 years old, man, and I was like, I heard Rapper's Delight, and I just caught the fever. Like, I had to learn the whole song. And if you can go to, I had to learn the whole song. So I just listened to that shit every day, Rapper's Delight, over and over and over.
Over and over.
And, it was over. Then it was like, you know, Ram LZ, the Treacherous Three. I got introduced to the battle tapes from the Bronx, and then I got... And then I think it was Run DMC that just really just took off for me. You know what I mean?
That's what really like made me like
that
feel,
summer,
feel,
I think
feel
it
music.
Was the summer of 82, I think, when Sucker MCs came out.
Yeah.
Like that summer, man. That summer. And then Strife came out with Set It Off, I think, that summer.
Set It Off on
like,
the left.
Yeah. Like that was a hell of a summer. And then I think who else came out that summer? The B-52s with like... that someone was ill.
That's like punk rock and hip hop were together. You know what I mean? In the Lower East Side, you know, in the Bronx, it was cool, man. You know what I mean? Like, it's a
underground culture, man. It didn't matter.
Yeah.
Everything was
mentioned. That's what it's crazy. Like Ram LZ and stuff. How and he spit back then. You know what I mean? Like it's art and he's fucking spit. It was crazy. You know what I mean? Like no one heard shit like that before. You know?
Nah, that was like the first time when hip hop was coming from the Bronx and meshing with the downtown shit and with the Andy Warhols and the Basquiat's, you know, Madonna's hanging out, Ram LZ's hanging out. They're bringing Grandmaster Flash downtown to DJ Bambada. Like all that shit was happening. Then Blondie was rapping, you know, on Rapture. Like that time was the kind of the time, man. You seen that downtown shit and hip hop click again in the Puffy era, but that was the first time around, boy. That was the shit that made me want to do this shit, man. You know, like, seeing that shit. At first, we was just, you know, breakdancing for the summertime and DJing a little bit in the basement, just trying to copy those scratches, you know. We didn't know what we was doing. We was fucking 10 years old. And then the shit just kind of took on an organic life of its own, man.
I want to ask you for also another thing. Is your family from Queens, right? Originally from the East Coast?
My family, you know, all from Jackson Heights, Flushing.
Yeah.
Bayside, Ozone Park. Far Rock. Like, my family's all through there. So, you know, they're all still out there, too. Everybody. But my mom's the only one that moved away. My mom moved out to L.A. And, you know, everybody's still back there. I still get back there often, man. Ain't nothing like Queens. My grandmother lives right by Shea Stadium, you know, right off of Main Street in 156. So
we used to
fucking basically walk up to Shea Stadium when I was a kid.
That's crazy because I grew up in Jackson Heights my whole life. It's a Corona sometimes, but I'm a Jackson Heights nigga. So it's like, it's a whole different world, bro. Right?
Yeah.
A whole different world, people from there. So.
Whole different world.
I want to say, when you your first, what was your first group that you ever did to anyone else?
My first group was 783. It was me and two cats from East New York, from the Linda Projects, from Brooklyn.
Yes.
And we had our first shit was a song called Mad Mad World. It was in the Color soundtrack in '88. So that was my first that was my first gold record in '88 on the Color soundtrack.
That's awesome.
That's amazing, bro. That's amazing, bro.
That had all, I think Bismarck was on that, Kane, like all the Cold Chillin', because Cold Chillin' was signed, I think it was through Warner Brothers, right when Cold Chillin' signed to Warner Brothers. So they did that, you know, Ice-T was on it. So that was kind of like my introduction to the music business. I was still a DJ collecting records. I didn't know how to produce yet, but after that, 783 got an album deal.
Yeah.
And we went out to Philadelphia to work with Joe the Butcher, who had, you know, mixed all the Schoolie D records and all the Philly stuff at that time.
Yeah.
So when we did the 783 record, Joe the Butcher produced, you know, I think half of it, and then the Bomb Squad produced one, so I got to go to Long Island and hang out with the Bomb Squad.
Oh, that's cool.
Then I got to go to work with Daddy-O from Stetsasonic, and you know, I seen how he did these things. When I was in Philly, I got to work with Schoolie D, Cash Money, this kid named Jazz, and you know, that was pretty much my, that month was my education on how to make records, because I was a kid, you know, 18, with all these records and all these ideas, but I didn't produce shit yet, so nobody was going to give me $100,000 at the time to go fucking make a record, you know, so I sat back and just absorbed everything and just learned everything, and then I was like, man, I didn't really like how this record came out, I'm going to go do my own shit, but I had already, we was already kicking it, me and B-Real and Sen. Over in Southgate, we was all hanging out, and I was like, look, I'm gonna go learn the music business and go over here to Hollywood and figure this shit out, you know, make y'all come with me whenever we do anything so y'all can meet people. And you know, I remember going to my first meeting at Def Jam with Mr. Bill Stephanie, who was like the executive producer on those early Public Enemy albums, and he was like, concept. And I was like, what the fuck is a concept, folks? LL Cool J's the B-boy, the lover of rap, Run DMC's the gangsters, Slick Rick's the storytellers, you know. And then he was like, you got a logo? I never heard the word logo. I was like, what the fuck's a logo? And then he started breaking down what a logo was, and I was like, okay. So then, you know, when I went back to Cyprus, I was like, yo, we got to get a logo. We got to have a concept. And then I remember one day I told Ben Sen, I was like, yo, y'all should be the Cheech and Chong of hip-hop because you be smoking mad weed over here. So, like, that just, you know, ain't nothing like just doing shit. So, man, I learned so much from that. Then I went on tour with, Kid and Play, Kwame, Salt and Pepper.
Oh, shit.
Today, Tony. We went on the MC Hammer tour, you know, with Teddy Riley and EU. They had the butt out. So I was doing stadium tours in 89.
Yo, that's wild.
Teddy Riley's a dope producer, so that's dope too, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. We was doing stadium tours, doing Mike Tyson's birthday, because we was managed by Rush Management at the time, you know. So that was just learning, man, just learning how to figure this shit out, man. And then I remember Sam Sever one time told me, this is before when I was DJing, because I won the 89 DMC DJ battle. Yeah. And he was like, yo, you should produce. And I'm like, man, fuck producing. I just want to DJ. But after I won that shit, and I was like, all you get is a fucking spray painted gold turntable, and y'all keep all the fucking money? Because they sold out like Wembley Arena, you know, for like 50,000 people. And I was like, man, fuck this. So I just bought me a drum machine and just started making beats, and I sucked. For about a year, every beat sucked. And I made beats every day. And then after one day, I made a beat. And it was banging. And B-Roll rapped on it. We plugged in the drum machine directly into the boombox. We had a big boombox with double cassette players. We plugged the microphone in. We plugged the drum machine in. I pushed play and B-Roll rapped. And we did the song Real Estate. And that was the first song we did that sounded like a record.
That's dope.
It sounds like a record, you know. And I was trying, you know, just figuring it out still. And then at that point, after that, all our demos sounded good. So, like, our first album's pretty much 3 years of just demos, pretty much our whole life. Just stop hanging out on the block, stop selling weed, you know, just hang out inside now and smoke weed and fucking drink and make records and make music, you know. I was working construction and selling weed. And then, you know, for about a year, she was cool, and then we got our deal. And there was this dude, Dave Funkenklein, who used to be at Def Jam. He moved to LA. He started Hollywood Records. They offered us $250,000 for a deal, and Joe the Butcher offered us $65,000. And then Sendog told me one day, he was like, "Yo," but I knew Joe the Butcher from the 783 project. So Sendog was like, "Man, I got a better feeling with Joe. Let's roll with Joe." And I was like, all right, man. That's a little bit older, you know. We always listen to Sam. And then thank God we did, because that other label folded. I made like $9,000. I think I made like $800 a record. I was happy. I bought some rims for my car. I bought a fucking system for my car. You know, I was happy as hell. I figured we'd sell about 100,000 records and have some respect and you know, be happy and shit. But, you know, shit took on a life of its own. And
yeah, you changed. You basically changed the music industry, the hip hop industry with your beats, bro. It's like there's West Coast beats growing up in New York, and you hear the West Coast beats, but your shit just like I knew. When I heard something, it was a Muggs beat. Like,
yeah,
it was like, that's Muggs, bro.
Very distinct style, yeah, for like, sure.
I knew back then, like, you couldn't use anybody's lyrics, or you was a biter and you was whack. You couldn't dress like people. You was a biter, you was whack. You couldn't look like him, you couldn't sound like him. Your music couldn't sound like him. You'd get dissed, man. You know? And not being black, we had to be extra dope. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, definitely.
We couldn't just be regular, so we had to be extra dope. And I knew, like, it's about having your own sound, man, and your own shit. So I had an advantage, though, because I'd be in New York all the time, and I'd go to the Wiz or whatever and get the new 12-inch records that you didn't even have in L.A., and I'd bring the Lee Jeans back and fucking Pro Kids and all the different shit New York had. I'd bring the Sheepskins back, you know, like, they didn't even have Champion hoodies in L.A. back then yet. And I would bring all the records back. And I'd be going between Mr. Magic and Molly Maul in between Red Alert and Chuck Chill Out and recording that shit on Friday nights and bringing it back. And so I kind of had a cultural advantage where I kind of had a hack where nobody else in L.A., few people might have, but they didn't have the access that I had. And, you know, I take the Greyhound back and forth to New York. It was $99 back then. Take like
How crazy is that? And people don't understand back in the day, when you're doing music, everything was like flyers, and it was like no social media. So you had to really dig and find a show and find where the club is at.
And find your audience. You had to find.
You had to meet people and talk to a ladder. You know,
there was no video channels and nothing. You know, there's maybe Ralph McDaniels, MTV Raps. Maybe that was it. You had to go to the clubs. You had to go to the parties, man. I would get on the train and go to car wash, you know, in Quando's on the Lower East Side, and just roll up in there by myself and shit, just chilling. Jump on a train at 2 a.m. back to Queens. Like you had a road to shit. There was none of this internet shit. You had to go find it and go figure it out. It was dangerous back in the 80s and the early 90s. The go to shit. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't like it is now, man. It wasn't like it is. So, but that was kind of the fun of the adventure, is finding this shit. But I just had a passion for it at one point, man. I was just like, yo, I'm doing this shit. And I knew, I already knew I was going to make it. It was waiting for me in the future. I just had to figure out how to get to it.
Well, you fucking killed it, man. I always remember the first time I heard Cypress Hill, I was one of Bill Spector's parties in Lower East Side. It was me, all my brothers, TMS, and we're wilding out. And I remember seeing you, they play How Can I Kill a Man, but they're seeing you and the Booyah Tribe niggas in the Lower East Side, Bill Spector's party, like Dante and everyone. And I remember the song went on, and I was like, what the fuck is this, bro? It was like so ill to hear that in the system. You mean the like playing? Yeah. And we all like, what the fuck? And people are like, oh, that's Cypress Hill. You mean like, blah, blah, blah. I knew Lisa Rowe from worked at the company over there.
Columbia. So
she was my homegirl. So she, like, so, like, she used to give the CDs and all that, so it's cool, man. Right? So, like,
how
it was
ill,
like,
hey, how ill did Booyah Tribe used to look rolling around in New York?
Yeah, it was. Listen. I remember one time that, like, we had a fight or something, and we were fucking someone up, and then we turned around, and Booyah Tribe guys were standing up, like, around you guys, and just to make sure everything's all right. But I was like, yo. You can't even, like, these niggas are so big. I never see anything in my life like that, bro. Yeah, I never see, like wrestling, and the football is just moments. I mean, I never see, you know, I was like, if I hit this nigga in the head with a chair, it wouldn't even do anything, bro. He would get mad. You mean? Then I met those dudes, they're the nicest guys in the world, bro. So, yeah. And a very talented bunch of guys, man, too.
Super talented, super nice, man. They, you know, they've always been on the scene out here from the early breakdancing days to their bands, you know, they were doing
the punk rock.
The homie came in with his hood on. She was, and it's dark in here. It was like
they're very punk. The Booyah Tribe, they knew a lot about punk rock and oldies, so it's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, they was into that. You know, it's funny because Ice-T was too. Ice-T was into punk rock. He grew up with punk rock. So
yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like everybody was multicultural, man. I just had an appreciation for everything. Like you, yourself, you know, me.
Yeah. And,
you know, I grew up with everybody, man. I grew up with everything, you know, every kind of people, every color, every race. And it was never nothing for us. And just knowing shit from like the little homies, older brothers, just learning different shit and like kind of exposed to everything at a young age, man.
Yeah, it's like... and I, when I first heard you like doing your shit, then you weren't off at that time, and you did the Angel Dust thing, and I heard that record, and that fucking, for some reason, maybe I don't know, maybe the part of my life where I just moved to LA, and it was just like maybe I was experimenting a lot with fucking acid and shit like that, you know, whatever, getting fucked up. But that album spoke to me. It was like the book. No, the Buck Cherry song, the homeboy.
That was like 2003.
Yeah, I was like, what? And just like I would never know that nigga from Buck Cherry could sing like that unless I'm saying, and have a soul like that. It was like a tortured soul he was singing, bro. And it was, you brought that out.
Andy Culkin from Anti gave me the deal.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to do a rap record, and I'm like, man, I don't feel like doing no hip-hop right now. I'm kind of bored, bro. I was like, let me just do an experimental record. And he was like, cool, do what you want. And, you know, I had Greg Dooley on there, and Josh from Buck Cherry did a couple
of things.
Josh was more on some, like, he sounded like some
emo. It was dope.
Shit. Like emo.
It was dope. Yeah, dope. It was like very emo, man. It was like Sneaker Pimps meets I was like, yo, you brought that out of him, man. I would never thought that guy could do that, bro.
That was fun. That record was a little fun, you know. And then the music business got weird, I think, probably a few years after that, where it's like the music business took a shit, and then YouTube wasn't popping off yet, Apple Music wasn't popping off, Spotify wasn't popping off. Like, it was like 5 years there where you're like, what the fuck's going on with this shit?
Yeah.
Man? You know, nobody could really figure it out. And, you know, music was down for 13 years. I think 2 years ago was the first year it broke even.
Bounced back,
And then last year was the biggest year the music business ever had. So, and you know, we're only at 5% of streaming right now. It's at 5% of its potential. Wait till streaming gets to like 30 or 40% of its potential. And they really start paying the artists good. And then, it's going to happen. It's just going to take a minute. It's just new technology. They're figuring it out. But
you know what?
I can go direct to consumer now. It's fucking great.
Yeah. You know what? Back in the day, remember getting all the CDs made and stuff like that? And now it's like, now it's like, boom, boom, here it goes. Here's like one button. Here it goes. You know what I mean?
That's
crazy, bro. And fucking, I bugged out on you also because. At one point, when I first met you at Cypress Hill thing, where I was with Prince Power Rule. He introduced us.
I wanted to ask both of you your first memory. So let me, Eve, before you jump in that story, let's ask Muggs. Muggs, what do you remember about the first time you met Danny?
Like, I don't remember. I just remember knowing him. It feels like I knew him forever. Probably because I knew homies that knew him too, and the homies were like, you know Danny. Fuck, I just feel like I've known him. Like, I can't really remember the exact first time, to tell you the truth. I just feel like I've known him, like, forever, it seems like.
Eagle, you were going to jump into the story right there.
So, I did a song with Muggs. He did with me and Prince Power Rule. And when I went to the studio there with him, it was like I was buggy being in the studio with him doing the song. So, but it was cool. And then watching Muggs work, it's like fucking, his work ethic is impeccable, man. It's like the way I do stuff, I go head first into the thing. But, you mean like I'm in there, I'm part of what's going on. The record, the Scarhead record sounds crazy, but shit was crazy in my life at the time. And Muggs, sometimes I watch what you're doing, and I'm like, this dude is got it, man. He owns the building. His office is in the building. His music studio is in the building. Everything's right there in the compound. And he runs it the way he does. No one says anything. He opens it when he opens it, closes it when he closes it. And the thing that he helps so many people, put so many people on. Yeah, I always like that. Like when I see Muggs, it's like we don't talk about really music, really. We just talk about, hey, what's up, bro? Before you bug out, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and you don't meet friends like that in the industry, bro. You know what I mean? It's like very rare. You know what I mean? And I'm glad. I'm always glad that we always we're like boom, boom, right there. Like it's like loving life. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, like we never. If I don't speak to you for months, we never lose a step. It's just like we just.
Yeah, it's like crazy to see, but then when I really bugged out on your shit, then we started going really ill when you put the Soul Assassin records out, and they were dope, really dope. And then you started working with the whole album with Sick Jack, and that shit blew my fucking mind, bro. You know what I mean?
That was
another level of hip hop from the West Coast that people like. I don't think people really know about the album and how dope it was, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was crazy because everybody asked me to produce them, and I was like, you know what? I don't want to work for nobody. I'm just going to have everybody come on my record, so I own everything. I own the whole record. And it was pre-mixtapes. So after I put those first few Soul Assassin records, then mixtapes got big, you know, around the 50 Cent era.
Yeah, yeah.
So then it was hard to make those records anymore because motherfuckers would rap on your mixtape for free. But as soon as they put an album out, everybody wanted bread. So it was kind of like, all right, the compilation record's dead because you ain't going to make a better one than a mixtape. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I moved on from there. Got bored for a few years. I did a record with Tricky. I did the Dust album.
Yo, that's crazy. The Tricky one too, yeah.
Yeah, I did that. And then I did a few other things. And then I was like, all right, let me make a hip-hop record, two hip-hop records a year. And then I'd say about 4 or 5 years ago, once I figured all the digital shit was locked in where I could do everything right here.
Yeah.
I was just like, and then videos got cheap. Remember, even before trying to do a video, the cheap video was $5,000.
Yeah.
And then I was just like, oh, it's on now. Now I'm just like, now I'm locked in.
I think
13 projects in the last 3 years.
Yo, and now you've always been here, but I'm saying, but now you have a whole different generation. Like you got Mayhem Loren, Ito, Crime Apple. It's like you're fucking killing it. This is how crazy it is. The other day, one of my boys was in the car. He's from Queens, and he was talking about you. And it was just like, out of nowhere. He goes, Muggs' new shit is fucking dope. And I couldn't stop laughing. He's like, he's talking to me like, like I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, he's a kid I know. And he was like talking about all the new stuff. And he's like, and I was like, yeah, like the dude's a beast. And I was like, it's cool because this guy's a normal Guido kid. You know what I mean? Guido kid fucking for Queens, man. It was dope, bro. To get that. Like,
yeah. It's just fun again, man. Like I'm actually enjoying the shit. Like it's 88 again. Like I was like, you know. So I'm like fucking having a good time. And then at the same time, man, I don't give a fuck what I did, man. I don't ever want to get comfortable and lean on my past. Like, all right, you won the championship a few years ago. What'd you do today, motherfucker? You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So for me, it's a sport, man. For me, it's like, I just love it. And, you know, I just like the community and the places it takes me around the world. You know, there's nothing like the lifestyle of music, man. And
yeah, yeah.
The friends I got and the opportunities I can give the people and the people I could hang out with and the places I can go because of this shit, I'm like, man, I'm blessed. Shit.
That's a great way to look at things, bro. You know what I mean? Especially nowadays, that's amazing, you know? It's like...
Bro, I know fucking 100 millionaires that don't have as much fun as us. They try to buy things and they're standing in the corner with a bottle and they're just like, you know, they ain't having half the fun as we're having. They want to kick it with us.
Like me, you and Risky at the club?
Oh my God. Risky's my hero, man. I fucking love that guy.
I want to ask you a question right now. Who was the craziest person you ever worked with? Like craziest, like this crazy, like bugged out and fucking. It's just like you're like, oh, this motherfucker is like on another level.
Man, a lot of them, but like I don't know if I want to tell the story and put anybody on the spot. But I'll tell you a few.
How about the story without naming the name?
Yeah, I'm gonna think about them because I know there's a lot. I can't remember shit. I'm fucking got Alzheimer's already at 50, so. I remember this one dude from that particular Dust album. He came in, lined up about five big ass lines, and just did five big ass lines and says, "I'm ready to go. Where's the vocal booth at?" And I was like, this motherfucker's out of his fucking mind, man. This motherfucker, you know. some of these rappers come in, man. I had a rapper come in with 200 hits of acid.
What?
Did fucking 10 songs and I threw them all away. It was funny. He just got fucked up doing acid, doing shrooms, doing coke and drinking, and did fucking a bunch of songs. And I was just like, yo, just, you got to come back, homes. You know what I mean? Like, way out fools, man.
What's the best of the best tour you've been on?
Oh fuck. I guess my favorite tours is the first tours. You know, that first time around the block, man, when you don't know what to expect, like the first Soul Assassins tour, the first time we hit the European festivals and seeing all that.
Man, how amazing is that?
The first go around with everything, because everything was like, wow, like fucking mind blowing. You know, then once you go around and do it all, then pretty soon it becomes like, fuck, I gotta go on tour again type shit. You know? Them first few years, man, I got to say from like 89 to like 96, man, was like, everything was amazing for me.
That's fucking amazing, bro. It's like, I love touring. It's like, as I get older, I know what I need now. Before I was just crazy. Now, like, I know what I need to, so I can function and play shows and do shit.
You mean now, like, now I go to sleep and get up and hit the gym and the spa. You know, before it was like party as much as you can every night.
Oh, and, my God.
You know, another thing that was hard, because I was trying to compete with, you know, Dr. Dre and Premier, but I was torn. They wasn't torn as much as us. We were torn 8 months a year. So not being able to make music used to drive me nuts. But being like, if I had to go on tour now with computers and shit, this is easy now.
Oh, well, yeah, you can do beats in everywhere.
There was no world phones. There was no fucking, you barely had a two-way pager, but it didn't go that far.
You got
money. Every day you had to check the money.
The Turkish place. The Turkish place. Put money into your phones in Europe.
The food sucked. You try to call with a country code at the hotels and you were jet lagged and tired. Like, this shit was a mess. It's easy to tour now with all this new technology.
Yo, the MacQuest and all that fucking.
We used the Atlas back then.
Yeah. Oh my shit. God.
Hey, Mug. So, look, can I ask you a question? When you're like, when somebody approaches you for a project, what do you look for in that project that makes you want to work on it? Like, what do you have to be inspired by?
I don't want to work, man. I just want to make. If they don't got like a couple hundred thousand, I don't even want to work. All walk into the studio, and I'd rather just hang out with my dog and my kid. But the dudes I do work with, they got to work harder than me. They got to have their fucking bars up. Like, I'm not trying to build you from zero to nothing, because that's a waste of time for me. You got to have your shit pumping. You got to have your shit together. You got to have a fan base. Then you got to work harder than me, and you got to impress me. And then we'll do a song, and we'll take it from there and see how it goes. You know what I mean? Then do I want to hang out with this motherfucker? Because now I got to be in the studio with these people. And then when they leave... Well, after they lay their shit, it takes me another month to finish the album every fucking day. You know what I mean? So, like, I'm pretty much done. All my projects are done all the way till 2022. I got 9 albums done. I'm just mixing it. So this whole year is done already.
That's so dope. Awesome. That's like, it's like so insane. Like me and you, we jump on planes. We like every pandemic. I'm like, I've been going back and forth to Milwaukee. Recording with the Force 5 record guys that signed me, that went out there to Scarhead record. I'm like, I'm actually producing the Big Left record that they signed, Big Left. So it's like, I have to be busy, man. If I'm not busy, then you know what that means. I'm going to find myself, I'm going to some trouble. You mean? So keep busy. And touring for me now is like, it's so crazy how I used to tour like an animal. I was like a Viking, you know what I mean? Going through like all these towns and fighting women. Now I got my girl on tour with me and she sells the merch for me. Like everything's a business to get together. It's like so insane that I could like be happy going on tour and I appreciate everything, bro. I appreciate everything that I got from music, bro. And it's crazy because my life was I was a street kid, graffitis, you know, it was in Queens. I was a big graffiti writer and also I was a street guy, and I got a lot of shit that happened in my life, and it's so much bad, good, but it's all happened for a reason, you know what I mean? And I'm here, you know what I mean? So
absolutely,
that's the same thing with you, bro. I know that, like, you me and you would chill like yo, we read people very well in our surroundings. and fucking like we go some of the dopest spots and some of the craziest hood spots. You mean? And we, yeah, we're just who we are, man. That's all you mean. And people show us love, man, because we have that energy. I mean, and that's all I always thought. Every time when I'm like, anything have to do with you mugs, I'm like, yo, I'm just happy fucking that I can talk to them and we can fucking make some jokes and fucking, you know, just laugh.
Oh, shit, have a good time. Hell yeah, me too, brother.
Think it's crazy.
Shit.
Oh, man, mugs. That's fucking nuts, bro. So listen.
So Muggs, what are you working on now? You just said you wrapped up a bunch of stuff till 22. Yeah. What, can you talk a little bit about any of those projects?
I'm just mixing. I'm dropping. I dropped a project last week with Al DeVino. I'm dropping the Winter Soul Assassin collection, but it's with this a single with Capadonna. I'm trying to see if I'm going to turn it into an EP and add three more songs with other people. Otherwise, it's two songs with Capadonna.
Sick.
With the Winter Collection, and then next year's Mayhem, Crime, Soul Assassin movie, the Black Goat movie.
Oh, that's
Black
dope!
Well, that's dope. Yeah,
visuals dope, bro.
Yeah, I'm really getting into making short films now. I'm bored of videos. I started shooting my own videos 3 years ago, so I think I made like 22 videos already because I got tired of everybody. So I just bought a camera. I took a bunch of master classes. Went on YouTube, learned how to do photography, learned how to shoot, went to all my photographer homies, all my video homies, picked all their brains for a month and, you know, just learned how to do my own shit, man. And now I'm going to move into short films. So
that's dope, bro. That's real dope, man.
It's fun because the music ain't enough now. It has to be some more shit attached to it for me.
Dude, the kids nowadays, their attention spans are fucking gone, bro.
Well, and even like Muggs was saying, the more that we create our own content can control that shit. You know what I'm saying? That's where it really is, because at the end of the day, you license it out for a little bit of time, but that shit's all yours and you own it.
I'm gonna build my own legacy, man. It's all about legacy now. I'm building my own shit and telling my own story. I'm not going to let somebody else tell my fucking story when I'm dead. You know what I mean? So yeah. I'm going to tell my story while I'm alive, man. And to me, I'm just in the middle of it. All that other shit was the beginning. Now I'm in the middle right here. So now it's starting to heat up and get juicy.
Yo, listen,
I like your outlook on that, Muggs. It's good to hear shit like that.
Yeah, man. It's different age, man. It's different, man. You know, you take care of yourself, man. You eat good. You work out. And I got more energy than I did when I was 30, bro. I feel fucking good. So I'm like, you know, our parents' days when they were 40, they were kind of burned out already.
Yeah.
Our time is like, it changed. I think this music keeps you young, man.
It definitely does. I mean, like, it's like, sometimes I'm going to be 49 this year. So I'm working out, doing this, but also like, I love doing the hip hop shit, but you know, my whole scene is the New York hardcore scene and the hardcore music. And that shit is fucking crazy to do that every night. And fucking, you know, like, and it's like,
that's a
oh
lot
my
of
God.
Energy,
huh? Oh my God. I'm not saying I'm running, jumping in the crowd, but you know what I mean? Like, it's
you're
crazy.
You're running a marathon at night.
You know what I mean? I'm running a marathon on top of a marathon. So you'll be back there. So now, but like I love smoking weed now. So it's like, it's a whole different world. It's like, oh, like I sit back. And sometimes when I do the hardcore set, so all weeded out, it's like I catch myself. It's like it's in and out. You know what I mean? But it's happy. It's on. It's on. You know?
Nice. So it's so fun, man. We're still enjoying it, man. We're blessed, brother. We're blessed to live this life, man. Shit, I wouldn't change it for nothing.
It's so insane, man. Because like the underworld, the underground is like where I dwell. My thing is like, I can always say, like, when I'm, like, anywhere, I could go any like, punk rock bar in the world and go inside there. They'll recognize me, get free drinks, get fucked up.
Right?
Hang out,
party people, say, like, take pictures and, you know, and go home, feel good, be like, oh, man, I still got it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it is.
It makes it worth it, bro, man. It makes it worth it, man.
It does. So now I'm just going to, you know, mix this Capadonna record tonight, try to finish it up because I want to get it out by November 24th, but I got to get the vinyl shit turned in because it's a 5-week turnaround. So,
but yeah, so, so Muggs, can I ask you to, I know we were talking a little bit about the past and shit, but dude, you've had so many experiences. What sticks out in your head? What was the moment where you felt like, oh shit, I, I made so, like I made this. This is the right path. You know what I'm saying? Was it with was it maybe when you guys hit that color soundtrack, or maybe a little bit before, or something no, after?
Bugs, was it? What was it when you were a Meteor Man?
Shit!
No, shit, you're in a movie, funny. Nigga. Yeah.
You know what about that?
Hey, you know what Meteor Man did to me? It made me not want to ever make movies. Cause
really,
I had to sit in the. I had to sit there all day. Then they was like, "All right, hurry up, come on." Then I'll go outside, and they was like, "Oh, never mind, we ain't ready for you." Then you go back and sit down. And you're smoking mad weed. You're smoking mad weed, and they're like, "All right, come on, they need you right now." And I was like, "But that was like 3 hours later." And it was like, "You're there for 8 hours, 5 minutes, shit." And I was like, "Man, fuck this shit. I'm cool." But no, I think you know, our record came out, and we didn't sell shit for like 6 months. We was following Naughty by Nature. We had a van. We was following their tour bus.
Yeah.
And, you know, and driving from city to city. We were playing in front of the promo shows, in front of 16 people, man. You know, showing up to these morning radio shows, doing in-stores in the daytime, stopping at the one-stops. And so what the one-stops was, there's local mom and pop shops. You know, obviously like Tower Records and Virgin, they all get their records through their own distribution and shit straight from the label. But the mom and pops were the places that would go to one stops to get their records and to be told like, what's the new shit that's coming out. So we'd have to go to mom and pops and go do signings and meetings.
Yeah.
Then we'd have to do the fucking mix show that night. Then we'd have to play in some random clubs. So we would do all these things in each city for like a 6 week promo run.
Damn.
Every fucking day. You know what I mean? So, once we started selling records, it was like this thing where we wasn't even on the charts, and we moved all the way up to number three. And I think it was the time MTV Raps was playing us like 2 or 3 times a week, man.
That's
and
great.
Then
That's
fucking great. Then Juice came out at the same time.
Yeah,
our record started taking off, and we just started getting on all the opening slots on the second stage and all the festivals. And you just felt like that. This shit is real now. You know what I mean? It's you feeling it take on a life of its own.
Yeah, that's so amazing, bro. That must have blown your mind when you're that young. You mean like
especially back then when it was still like the real music industry. You know what I mean? There was no internet. You know, like just the whole process. I mean, that must have just been crazy.
Yeah, so I think all that, and then we never even had time to take it, bro. Every motherfucking show, the managers just kept us on the road.
Yo, Muggs, we lost. You sound kind of distant a little bit. We can't hear you.
Right here, you hear me?
Oh, now
I was like, the managers just kept us on the road, and I didn't realize why, because that motherfuckers was making more money than us.
They get paid no matter what.
I was like, we get 100 grand, them motherfuckers get 150, and then you know, by the time we pay the agent and the fucking business manager, that's another fucking 15% off of us. That's 30%. We get 70, then we got to go chop that shit up 3 ways. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and then I got to pay taxes on that shit, so I'm coming home with like fucking 16,000.
Oh my god,
nothing. Managers were getting 15,000 off the top of that 100,000. So you was just like, "Yo, man, this is what's going on." That's why you motherfuckers is keeping us on the road.
I could never be a manager because it's too much. Like you know, musicians are fucking. A lot of them are fucked up. You mean they like that?
Oh yeah, they're like big fucking babies.
Yeah, and you know, they cry, especially the real big managers. These dudes cry about everything. The young kids, their heads get gassed, and people put other camps put stuff in their ears. You mean so it's crazy, bro. I mean, imagine I deal with all these different attitudes and personalities, and it's like, you know, I couldn't handle it. You mean like I'd be like, oh shit, man. So. But
yeah, it's too much. I don't know how these motherfuckers, they just want to be in the same room, you know what I mean, and like be around the lifestyle.
Yeah it's nuts, man, because like sometimes you know, like you and me, we have our roots of music and the scenes, and like the hardcore scenes and the graffiti scene and the hip-hop scene all together. Then it's our life. It's people think it's like, oh yeah, like this and that. No, it's our life, our lifestyle. And this is us.
Right.
This is how we are. We're not a different person when you speak to us. This is how we are. When we do our business, we understand when it comes down, business means everything. You know what I mean? Like at the end of the day, you know, that's why you do, like, you know what I mean? So, but it's like when you're doing it, this is my life, man. Like shit happened, you know, like everything happens in my life, like a regular person, you know, tragedies and fucking a sorrow and fucking ups and downs, you mean? It's just like you roll with the punches, man. You mean?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You mean so?
So I'm saying, you know, grinding and out. After the first album was done, the label came up to us and goes, "We need the album in 3 months.
Ooh.
If we want to put it out in 3 months, my bad." Yeah. So I went in. We made the album in a month. We made Black Sunday in 1 month.
No shit.
Amazing album.
That's amazing.
Fucking amazing. Yeah, fucking album.
In, and then the funny thing was, A to the K already came out on a soundtrack. Yeah. And Hand on the Glock came out as a B-side, so two of the songs. So we really only made like 8 new songs, and then with a couple interludes, because the interludes like made it look like 14 or 15. But
yeah,
so we did that, and then boom.
Those fucking songs are, those songs changed a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I remember buying it on cassette at Strawberries, riding my bike up to get that.
I was listening to Wu-Tang, Dr. Dre. Ministry, remember Ministry, Al Jordan?
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Oh, motherfucking nuts.
And I was listening to fucking Black Sabbath every day. So that's how that record came out that way.
Yeah, you do. You sample Black Sabbath in the beginning of the record. Yeah. Dope, bro. Yep. It's like when you heard that, I remember you playing in, you know, Roseland and fucking, and it was a whole big thing. You guys were like, had a problem with the Source magazine or something. It was cool, but you guys dissed them. It was crazy.
Yeah.
It was cool as fuck, bro, to see that all the kids, bugging out on the music, bro, and saying
going fucking nuts. Roseland shows were the shit. Remember those shows? Yeah. Were dope.
And that's all we would go there 40 deep. Me and my people. You know what I mean? And it would be like hardcore kids. It was like a pit, bro. It was a real pit. It wasn't like
whole,
it was
a real
pit.
The whole shit was just a fucking nasty ass pit.
It's crazy, man. It's crazy shit.
Those are some good shows, man. I miss that place.
It was really dope, but Muggs, bro, I don't want to say thank you for doing this, like my podcast, you know, like
thank you so much, hey, Muggs. Before we let you go, Muggs, where can everybody find you online? Plug the Instagram and plug.
Oh man, don't leave me alone, man. Don't even come. Leave me the fuck alone. If you don't got my number, you're good. Stay over there. Hey, it's a fucking pleasure, Danny. Anything, bro. I appreciate y'all fucking inviting me on here, man, and thinking about me, man. It means a lot, fellas. Thank
Anytime,
you very much,
man.
Always for being gentlemen and for all the love throughout the years, fellas, you know, and I'm just looking forward to being friends for the next fucking rest of our lives, man. You're some good motherfuckers. Thank you.
I love you, brother, man. I love you, brother. And fucking, yo, everyone, DJ Muggs, the best producer in hip hop I know. To me, personally, like, one of the best, and I'm just glad that you're fucking killing it and doing music, and you're bigger than ever now, and fucking just keep on doing it, brother. You mean? Keep on doing it.
I appreciate it, dog. Thanks for the love, man.
All right. For tonight, guys, that's a wrap for episode number 13. Make sure you're subscribing to our YouTube channel. Subscribe to the newsletter.
Until the motherfucking next time.
Yeah. I want to thank everybody once again. Love you, Muggs. Thanks, Danny. I'll talk to you guys soon. Peace.
Bowie, Dylan, Marley. You've heard the names and maybe you've heard their songs, but what about the stories behind the records that made titans of music like these so universally loved and important? Join me, Josh Adam Myers, host of The 500, as each week I go through a different album from Rolling Stone Magazine's 500 Greatest Albums list from 2012 with an incredible lineup of comedians, actors, and musicians talking about how the music has impacted their lives. New episodes of The 500 come out every Wednesday. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.